We are holding on Kol Pirches Amar Aleph by the top, the first Mishnah. Mishnah says, that goes with chaveri. If somebody stole from somebody else, or shehil vehemenu, or he borrowed money from him, or shehif gidloi, or he gave a pikadon, but yishuv, in all those cases, if it was in a settled area, in town, lo yachzalei b'midbar, then he can't return it to him in the desert. Meaning, if the guy is willing to accept it there, or if he himself is demanding it there, then fine. But if the let's say, for example, the Gazlan, right now they're in the desert, and he says, you know what, I have the thing with you, take it back now, he can't force the Nigzel to take it over there.
To go to the desert?
No, when they're in the desert, because the desert is not a place where it's a place where it's likely to get lost, it's likely to get stolen, it's like whatever, they're likely to be attacked by bandits or whatever. So therefore, the Nigzel or the Malver or whatever can have a valid claim that, look, you originally got the thing by Yishuv in a more settled area, in an area where the thing will be more safe. You have to return it to me in such an area. And meaning, in other words, then therefore, so if he tries...
It was lent in the desert?
No, we're talking about it was lent by Yishuv. That's what we said. Yishuv means in a settled area in town. Lo he can't force the guy to take it back in the desert. But if he said it's on condition to go out to the desert, then he can return it to him in the desert. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like it means that if the loiver said to begin, the loiver or the gazlan or whatever said to begin with, that I'm borrowing it from you on condition that I should be able to return it to you in the desert, then that would be fine. The question is, if that's all it is, then the Gemara is going to say that's shita, that's obvious. So the Gemara is going to give a little bit of a different spin on it. Wait. Okay, so the Gemara says, Ruminu. I have a contradiction. The Kuf Yud Ches. So we said in the Mishnah that there's three things. We said somebody stole, somebody borrowed from somebody, or somebody accepted a pikadon, and we're talking about where he can return it. So all three of them seem to be on the same level, that if it was done by Yishuv, if he did it in town, then he does not have the right to make the other guy take it back in the midbar. Ruminu, but I have a contradiction. But Isis says, milva mishtalemes b'chol makom, a milva alone can be paid anywhere. Aveda pikadon ein mishtalman el b'mkaimam, whereas a lost object or pikadon can only be paid in their place, meaning in the place, in the kind of place where he lent it to him, or where he was mafkid it or whatever. So there is a difference between milva and anything else, apparently. I'm going to buy a hachakam. No, what the b'raisa means to say is a little bit different. Milva nitna litova b'chomachim. It means the b'raisa is talking from the point of view of the owner of the money or the object or whatever. The b'raisa is telling us, where does he have the right to demand it? He has the right to demand it anywhere. Because, yada al yoyna, in other words, he has the upper hand. Mefarshim say the logical reason behind it is he did the other guy a favor, he lent him money. Therefore, he has the ability. If he wants the money now, when they both happen to be in the desert, and he says, give it to me now, then the other guy, the loiva, does not have the ability to say, well, wait, let's wait till we're back in town and I'll give it to you then. He has to pay it right there on the spot. As opposed to Avedo or Pikadon, whereas when it comes to an Avedo or Pikadon, the guy does not have Yodei Al Yoyin, because it's not like he did the other guy a favor. In the case of a Pikadon, not that the other guy did him a favor by watching it for him. Therefore, you can only demand them in their place.
And the same thing with Avedo.
You can only demand them in their place, meaning faket. If they're out in the desert, if they're out away from town, and the owner of the pikadon, let's say, turns to the other guy and says, "Give me the pikadon," he can say, "Not over here. I'll give it to you back at home." Now, the obvious question is, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, he gave him an object as pikadon, or the object was an aved or whatever, what's the chiddush? Of course, he doesn't have it with him. And if he has it with him, what's the problem of giving it right then and there? So therefore, the shittim ukubetis brings from one of the rishonim, the Ramah, who explains, let's say we're talking about that the Aveder, the Pekadon, was money. So, he was masked with him, let's say, $100, which he has in a safe or buried in the ground or whatever, like he's supposed to at home. Now it so happens they're both on a trip. So the owner of the Pekadon turns to the Shomer and says, you know what, you have money along with you, don't you? return me, give me 100 to pay for, you know, that'll take care. And then the money, when you get back home, then you'll have that money waiting for you over there. You can keep, because money is fungible after all. You know, you give me 100 now, you'll take the 100 that I originally gave. We're saying he doesn't have the right to do that. If it was a milveh, he'd have the right to do that. But because of the pekadon, he doesn't have the right to do that. And the point is, anyway, the bright, because again, with a milveh, the malveh did the loiver a favor. Therefore, yada al yoneh, he has the upper hand, and he can choose the time when he can choose the place when to be paid back. If he wants it now, and we're assuming, obviously, we're talking about that the term of the loan is over. There's Sam Milva, the Gemara says in a few places, is for 30 days. So we're talking about 30 days of passage, or, you know, whatever the time was that they made up between themselves. Where, again,
with
an Aveda or Pekadon, then they'd be more on an equal level. Yeah. So anyway, so the Braisa is talking about from the point of view of where can the Baal HaMamon demand it? The Mishnah, rather, is talking about from a different point of view. Where does the current person who's holding on to that moment, where does he have the ability to return it against the will of the other guy, to force the other guy to accept it? So there, the Mishnah says, all of them are the same thing. Gzela, Halva, Pekadon are all on the same level. You can't force the guy to take in the Midbar. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Amanaf lost it for Midbar, that if it was on condition that they're going to go into the Midbar. So again, that sounded like it meant, in other words, L'Hachila, when he borrowed the money, for example, he said, you know, in a couple of weeks, we're both going to be going out to the Midbar. I'm borrowing this money from you on condition that I should be able to, if I so desire, give it to you there in the Midbar, even though it's more at risk over there. But the question is, if that's all it means, pshita, then that's obvious, of course. Any tnaish of a moment is fine. The answer is, loy tzricha, no. The case the Mishnah has to tell us is, the omelay, he says to him, lehevi hai pikodin gaboch, suppose that let's say, for example, we're not talking about a halval, we're talking about a pikodin. Again, the same principle applies to all of them. So he gives him a pikodin, for example, and he says, I want you to keep this pikodin by you, da'anola midbo nafikna, because I'm going to be going out to the desert, so I don't want this valuable object to be along with me. I may lose it, or it may get robbed from me, or what have you. You keep it over here because you're in town. And the other guy says, the Shomer says, actually, I'm also planning to go to the desert. And therefore, the implication, he doesn't actually say so in so many words. If he said so, obviously that's a Tanai again, and then a Tanai, we said, is Pshita. So therefore, Marsha and a number of other Mepharshim explain that this next line over here, the Ibra'ina, is the implication. All he's saying is, at the time he receives the Pekadon, you should know, I plan to travel to the Midbar as well. The implication, therefore, is that if I should want to take it along with me and return it to you there, then I'll be entitled to return it to you there, and you can't protect it. In other words, even though that's implied, that's by saying that I'm going to be going out to the Midbar, that's the point. That's the point of the Mishnah, that therefore that implication is good enough. Even though it wasn't a full-fledged Tanai, it's still enough. Rashi has a slightly different gear, so not Ibra'ina, but Ibois, that if you want it to be returned to you over there, then I'm reserving the rights to return it to you over there. A broadly similar idea. In other words, even though there's not a full fledged Tanai, but because he made it clear that he himself is going to be going out to the desert as well, then therefore the implication is that he has the right to return it over there, even if the guy doesn't want to take it at the time because of the fear that he may lose it or whatever. Next Mishnah. If somebody says to somebody else, I stole from you, or Hilvisani, or you lent me money, or Hifkad to Etli, or you left the cotton by me, and in all those cases, I don't know whether I paid you back, whether I gave it to you back or not. Chayev l'shala. Then he's chayev to pay for reasons which we're going to discuss in the Gemara. But if he says, I don't know whether I stole from you or you lent me or whether you were masked by me, possible, Shalom. And basically it boils down to, the Gemara is going to talk about it, boils down to the sort of Bori Veshema versus Shema Veshema, but that's the nuances that we're going to deal with in the Gemara.
He doesn't know if he stole.
So there's two cases. One where he knows he stole,
right,
but he doesn't know whether he paid it back. So in that case, then, the fact that you don't say, now normally you would say, uki mamona cheskes more, that whoever has possession of the money now has the chazaka, you would have to prove that the other guy is entitled for it. However, in the first case of it here, since you know for a fact that he stole, he himself is admitting that he stole, and he himself is not certain when we paid back, that destroys that cheskes, that destroys that chazaka, and therefore therefore he becomes obligated to pay.
Whereas do it in common.
Well, if two Adam come and say that he paid him back, yeah, of course, nothing to talk about, but we're not talking. On the other hand, if he's not sure if he ever stole from him, then you have the ordinary chazaka that any money that's in his possession presumably is.
As opposed to the other case.
The Pashto say the person doesn't know. Well, that's what the Gemara is going to discuss, actually. Itmar. So now we had a discussion of Amiroyim about this, about a related case. Now, so in the Mishnah, right, in neither case in the Mishnah is the Nigzal taking him to court. In neither case is the Nigzal saying, yes, you stole from me. The Pashto says in the Mishnah, it's all the Gazlam talking, either admitting that I stole, but I don't know whether I paid it, or saying I'm not sure if I stole from you. The Pashto, the other guy, didn't say anything one way or the other. So now you have, what about the other way around? Monali biyotcha, if one person says, I have a mana in your hand, meaning I lent it to you or you stole it from me or what have you, and the other one says, I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if I stole it from you. I don't know if I borrowed it from you, etc. Or I don't know, any idea can also include, I don't know if I paid it back. There are two Amiroyim on each side of the question. Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda say that he's chayev to pay back, and Rav Nachman and Rav Yechanan say he's potter. Namely, Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda Amri Chayev, because they say Bori Veshema Bori Odif. Here you have a case. The one guy is making a tainus Bori. He's saying, for sure, I lent you money, let's say, and I haven't been paid back yet. The other guy is saying Shema, maybe not. Maybe I didn't borrow it, or maybe I already paid it back, or what have you. And therefore, Bori Odif. So therefore, the Bori claim, the definite claim, is the stronger one. Therefore, he has to pay. Again, therefore, that takes away that destroys the ordinary chazaka that we would say that the fact that the defendant over here has the money in his possession. Normally, that would, if it weren't for the Bori Veshema situation, that would be enough to say that he's entitled to keep it. The other guy would have to bring a solid proof that he owes it to him. But here we have Bori Veshema, so therefore they say that not. Rashi says in the next case, according to the opinion that Potter, the two, the Rav Nachman and Rav Yochanan, say he's Potter, say that he'd have to swear a Shavua Tesis. Tosfos discusses that a little bit and says not necessarily in all cases would he have to swear a Shavua Tesis. Only maybe if there was Drora de Mamona, like first he had admitted it and now he's denying it or something like that, then there would be cases involving Shavua Tesis. But not so other than that, then no. Because the guy doesn't have any actual proof for his claim. The guy was claiming Bari. He's just saying, I know for a fact he doesn't have Edim or Shtar or what have you. Okay. Rav Nachman, Rav Yechanan, Ami Potter, because the usual rule, Uki Mamona B'chaz Kasmari, because you leave the money in the chazaka of the one who has it in his possession. The other guy, has a Bari claim. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is he doesn't have any evidence. All he has is his Bari claim. A Bari versus Shema is not strong enough to override that. Bari means definite. Okay, let's look at our Mishnah and then see how that bears on this machlokes. The Mishnah said, the second part of the Mishnah said that if he says, I don't know whether you lent me money, then he's potter. So you have to consider, what is the case over here that we're saying he's potter? Are you talking about that it's a case where the other guy is not even asking him, is not even demanding it from him? Well, Reisha Nami Deloy Kotavale. Then in that case, in the Reisha, on the face of it, presumably, the Reisha and the Seifa have to be similar situations. There's one variable difference between them. The difference whether the guy is Moida that I did borrow or whether he's saying I'm not sure if I borrowed. In either case, it sounds like the other guy is not claiming anything. Am I chayev? So why, just because he says that he'll be sani, just because he says he'll be sani and I'm not sure if I paid back, why should that make him chayev? Elod de Katova. So therefore, Elod de Katova. So no, therefore, the Mishnah, therefore, by elimination, the Mishnah must be talking about a case where he is teveahim. So now it's a little bit different than before. We assumed that the Goslin or the Loiver or whatever comes over on his own and says, I stole from you, or I borrowed money from you, or I'm not sure if I stole or I'm not sure if I borrowed. Now, based on this, we're saying a little bit of a different twist. No, the other guy comes to him and says, the claimant, the one who is presumed to be the original owner of the money, comes and says, you stole from me, or you lent money, or you borrowed money from me, and you didn't pay back. And now we have the two cases in the Mishnah, one where he admits that, yes, I stole, but I'm not sure if I paid it back, where since you have one Bari versus Shema, then we make him pay. And the other one where he says, I'm not sure, and the other one where he says, I'm not even sure if I borrowed it in the first place.
So now we're saying both cases, the Rosh and the Sefer, are claimants?
We would assume that we're talking about claimants.
The Russian information sounds like, shouldn't he be saying, I'm money to you at the point,
somebody
is the one who's beginning the argument?
Maybe, but that's the Gemara's point. If he just says on his own, Gizalticha, why does that obligate him to pay? Okay, you want to argue losses, Yedei Shemayim, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, then fine. But when the Mishnah says Chayev, it sounds like he's actually obligated Mitzad Adin to pay. How can he be obligated just because he said Gizalticha? Especially when he's saying, I'm not sure if I paid you back. Yeah, so there must be a Tevea. That's what in the first part of the Mishnah, he's Chayev, exactly. That implies there's a Tevea, that's the point. That implies somebody must be claiming something. V'chatoni Sefer Potem L'Shalem, and yet the Sefer says that if he answers, I'm not sure if I borrowed the money, then he's Potter. So there you go. You have one guy claiming Bari, you definitely borrowed money from me and didn't pay back. The other one is claiming Shema, I'm not sure if I borrowed it at all. And the Mishnah is saying he's Potter. So that would fit according to Rav Nachman and Rav Yechanan. That doesn't fit according to Rabbah and Rav Huna. They would say he's Chayev in that case. The answer is no. Lloyd, no, you're not understanding the Mishnah correctly, according to Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda would say. You have to understand the Mishnah differently. No, both cases in the Mishnah are talking about the other guy did not actually sue him for anything. He, as the simple meaning of the Mishnah seems to indicate, he voluntarily came, he started the conversation and said, Gizalticha, or it'll be Sani, or what have you. Or he voluntarily starts the conversation and says, I don't know if I borrowed from you, or what have you. The Resha, and the Resha, we say he's Chayev. We don't mean he's Chayev Ne'ikir Adin. We mean he's Chayev if he wants to be Yotze, the Yedei Shemayim, if he really wants to do proper tshuva and avoid being punished by the Eidishter, then he'll be Chayev in the sense that he himself will be obligated to return the money. But not based in Camp 4. As opposed to, in other words, in the Sefer, because he himself is not even sure if he stole it or borrowed it or whatever, then he's caught to even Bavol Lotz Yedei Shemayim. It's Rav Nami, and
it's both cases.
So both cases are talking about, no, so both cases, so Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda would both explain that the Mishnah is talking about the other guy is not claiming anything. He himself voluntarily came forward. But in the Reisha, he's paying lots of Yedei Shemayim, and in the Sefer, he doesn't even have to do that. Again, according to Rav Nachman and Rav Yechanan, you don't need that. According to them, even Bari V'Shema, you're still Potter, even if the other guy is making a tiny body. So the Mishnah could just as well be talking about where the other guy says, I lent you money and you didn't pay, and the other guy says, yes, I borrowed, but I'm not sure if I paid, versus I'm not sure if I borrowed. It's Manami. In fact, it was said also, if one person says to the other, there's a mana of mine in your possession, meaning that I lent it to you and you didn't pay back, etc., and the other one says, I don't know, Chayev, then he's Chayev, Bavol Lotzis Yedei Shemayim, only in terms of if he wants to be Yotzi Yedei Shemayim. So the point is, in other words, Rashi says, even if we say that he's Potem and Dinah Adam, he would agree that where there is a certain extent of Tainas Bari, like over here, where he's saying, Mono Libi Yodcha, then therefore he'd be Chayev Lotzis Yedei Shemayim.
Once it's decided this way, and after that, two Eidim come, that could reverse?
If two Eidim come,
after he was declared
if he wants to pay Bidei Shemayim, then he already paid. There's nothing there.
No, but he didn't pay.
He didn't pay, fine. If two Eidim come, then at that point, of course, at that point, we reopen the case, yes. which, based on Rashi, it comes out, in other words, what you have is really there's two different things over here. I mean, in the regular case, in the regular case of Bori Veshema, the halacha is in fact like the halacha is in fact like Rav Nachman and Rav Yechanan, that he'd be potter. But what we're saying is, even we're saying that Rav Huna would necessarily have to explain the first part of the Mishnah, that it's ball up to Sidei Shemayim. Rav Nachman and Rav Yechanan don't have to understand the Mishnah that way because they can say they're talking about a Teveya. Nevertheless, they do accept the basic principle that there can be a case where you're technically potter and you still have to pay off to Sidei Shemayim.
They'd rather say it's a Teveya, but they...
But nevertheless, if there's no Teveya, you still have to pay off to Sidei Shemayim. Next Mishnah. Hagunav Tlemina Eder. If somebody steals a sheep from the flock, the Hziroi, and then he returned it, Umes, and then that animal died, or Nignav, or it was stolen, Chayav Achriyosa, then he's Chayav for the Achrayas of it. Because as soon as he stole it, it became in his Rishus. He's at that point obligated for any onus or anything that happens to it. When he returned it, it's no good until he informs the owner, which actually the Gemara is going to mention now when we learn the Gemara in a second. We're going to learn there's four different ways of understanding the Mishnah. But first we'll deal with on the simple level, on the surface level of what the Mishnah means. That's what the Gemara is going to deal with. And Rashi uses the expression ad shemoyde lehu lebailim, until he informs the owner. We're going to see in the Gemara that's going to be the opinion of Rav Chisda, but wait, we'll see. Lo yodur bailim, lo b'nei vachet, lo b'chazirot. So that first part is talking about where the owner knew that it was stolen and didn't know yet, he wasn't informed, or he didn't find out on his own or whatever, that it was returned. What if he didn't know that it was stolen, and he didn't know that it was returned? Umanu atatsoin, ushleimahi, and the owner counted the sheep and found the full number that he expected to. Potter. Then in that case, at that point, the ganav becomes potter for anything that happens to the sheep after that, because at that point, the owner knows that all the sheep are there. So therefore, in other words, it's the equivalent of the owner having been informed. Since he was never informed, since he never knew about the ganav in the first place, then there's nothing to inform him.
How could he not be potter?
Well, we're going to see in the Gemara. It's not so simple. So, Amar Rav, the rule is like this, Rav said, Lada'as sorech da'as. If the thing was stolen, ladas, meaning the owner knew that it was stolen, tzorich das, then you need to have, the owner needs to know that he needs to be informed when you return it. Because, Rashi says, the point is, Rav would say, that once the owner knew that it was stolen, then it's considered a full-fledged gzela, or gneva, as the case may be. In that case, you have the mitzvah of a heshev as a gzela. The heshev as a gzela implies you can't just put it back in there without informing him. He has to actually be informed. You have to actually tell him.
By the ganav.
By the pashtus, by the ganav, I don't know, maybe he can send somebody else, but whatever. The point is, somebody has to inform him. Until he's informed, the ganav is still chayav b'achriyos. Yeah, the pashtus, we learned before in a chovel, that even if you pay him, he still needs mechilo, yeah. But anyway, even if the guy wasn't loichol, yet once you informed him, then for sure you're potter from any achrayos if it dies afterwards, yeah. Shaloi ladas. No, well, we're talking about animals so far, but we'll see on Amud Beis. We'll talk about cases involving stealing money. Wait, right now we're dealing with our Mishnah. Right now we're dealing with the meaning of our Mishnah, which is talking about animals.
So that's the question.
What?
What do you return? You return.
What do you mean? You stole an animal. You're returning the animal. What's the question? Unless there was a shinui to the animal, as we've learned before, then you have to return the original animal.
It
died after he returned it. He stole it on Sunday, he returned it on Monday, and it dropped dead on Tuesday. Is he still chayev at that point? That's going to depend, yeah. But if he stole it without the owner even knowing, so the owner never knew it was missing, then all you need is that he just counts his sheep and finds the same number as he expected to. So therefore, when the Mishnah says that they counted the sheep and found the full number, then that's referring only to the case of the Sefer. Because in the Reisha, it's not going to Rav. It's not enough that he just counts them. You actually have to inform them. Fine. Or Shmuel Amar. Shmuel says, no, that's not what the Mishnah means. Bein Ladaf, Bein Shalil Ladaf, Minin Poiter. No, regardless whether the owner knew at the time that the sheep was missing or didn't know at the time that the sheep was missing, once he counts the sheep and finds them all there, then at that point, the ganav becomes potter from anything that happens to the sheep after that.
Wait a minute, it's someone else.
Really,
when he brings an extra animal, is he still chayav?
I don't know. I mean,
Reuben had a flock. Shimon steals something, and Levi.
Why is Levi randomly bringing a sheep of his
to
give to?
He wants to cover Reuben. He doesn't want anybody.
I don't know. So then maybe. I mean, the fact of the matter is, he paid on behalf of Shimon. Afterwards, if Levi decides to take Shimon to Beit Din, that's his business. Okay. Anyway, so Bein Ladas, Bein Shelo Ladas, Minyan Poter. So regardless whether the guy knew at the time that the sheep was stolen or not, Shmuel says, once the owner counts his sheep and finds the entire number that he expected, then at that point the Ganav is Poter. Therefore, the last words of the Mishnah, that when you count the sheep and find the full number, you're Poter, is referring to both cases of the Mishnah. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says, that we look, according to Shmuel, the Mishnah goes as follows. You stole the sheep, and the owner knew about it, and the owner knew about it once it, and then you returned it and it died. You chayav b'achol yosei, unless the owner counted his sheep first, and then in the sefer, if the owner didn't know that it was taken and didn't know that it was returned and counted his sheep and found them all there, you also potter. That would be how Shmuel learned the Mishnah. Rabbi Yechanan, Amal Adas Minyan Poter. Rabbi Yechanan says, I agree with Shmuel.
It seems hard that he should count without knowing that it was stolen.
Why? Every so often, shepherds count their sheep all the time. And you have the famous thing that Rashi says, that looks at how many times the Jewish people count in the desert, that it's like a person counting a sheep. But it's a regular thing. At the end of the day, you bring your sheep home, you count them. It's a fairly normal thing. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Ladas Minyan Poter, I agree with Shmuel that as far as if it was Ladas, if it was stolen and he knew that it was missing, that once he counts and finds them all there, meaning if the Ganav returned it, then at that point the Ganav is Poter for anything that happened to that sheep. Shaloi Ladas, but on the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan is more makel than Shmuel if you stole it without the guy knowing and returned it without him knowing. I feel a Minyan Nami like Tzaris. He doesn't even need to count it for you to be Poter. As soon as you put it back, then you immediately potter from anything that happens there after that. Because you never knew about it, yeah. V'chi katoni umonu asatzoin v'yishleima aresha. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan says, the case that the Mishnah mentioned that you counted the sheep and found the full number is referring to the resha. In other words, if you stole a sheep, you returned it and it died, you chayav b'achol yosei, unless the owner counted as sheep, which at that point you'd be potter. And in the sefer, if the owner didn't know, lo b'vnei b'atzev, lo b'chazir asei, you're potter regardless whether we counted or not. Rav Chista has a fourth way of looking at it. Lada'as Minyan Poter. If it was Lada'as, if the owner knew about it, then once he counts them and finds all of them there, then you're Poter. Shaloi Lada'as, Tzarech Da'as. But if you did it without his Da'as, then you need to inform him. So this is actually exactly the opposite of what Rav said. Rav had said that if it was Lada'as, you need to inform him, and Shaloi Lada'as, once he counts, it's good. Rav Chista says exactly the other way around. Therefore, again, like Rabbi Yochanan said, when it says monuas atzoin and you found the full number, aresha, then it's referring to the first case. Because, in other words, according to Rav Chista, the point is that the Mishnah then goes as follows: You stole the sheep. The owner knew about it. Mesa nignav chayav b'achol yosei. Unless he counted them, then you'd be kosher. But if it was lo yodu b'ilim living nivotiv lo b'chazir asay, you're going to be chayav regardless, unless you actually informed him. Omar Rafa.
The case where he's returning something, he's returning the animal and it dies. Is there a question over here? Maybe he mistreated. That's then why not?
No, we're assuming that he didn't. Yeah, I mean, if there's reason to think that it was due to something that he did, sure.
One died. No one else died. Just the one he was.
It so happens. I mean, look, animals. You know, animals can also get heart attacks or whatever. No, you're right. I mean, if there's some reason to attribute the death of this animal to what he did, yeah, then we're not talking about that. We're talking about where there's obviously no causal connection between them. Omar Rola, my time is Rav Chista. Okay, what is Rav Chista's reason? Where does he get his opinion? The other three, first of all, all of them have this in common. They're all saying that Lada'af is more serious than Shaloi Lada'af. Therefore, according to Rav, you need to inform him when it's Lada'af. According to Shmuel, either way, when he counts it, it's good enough, etc. Rav Chista seems to be doing it backwards. Why should Shaloi Lada'af be stricter than Lada'af? But you have to inform him if it was Shaloi Lada'af and not inform him if it was Lada'af. And second of all, Rashi says, the Mishnah is more easily understood according to the first three opinions. According to Rav Chista, it's very hard to shtelein the words of the Mishnah. So where does Rav Chisda get his opinion from? Hoyove in Katan Nigri Baraisa, because he taught it outside steps. Meaning, in other words, he took the sheep away from the flock. This sheep normally are very, you know, they're herd creatures. They stay together. They stay together in the flock. They don't just wander off on their own. Like this, he took this sheep, and now it's like, you know, it knows what the outside world is like. So therefore, if the owner knew about it, he knew at one point the sheep was missing, fine, you don't have to inform him when you return it, Rechista says. Once he counts his sheep and he finds this one that was previously missing back, he himself will realize, wait a minute, from now on I better keep a closer eye on the sheep so it doesn't wander off again. But if he never knew that it was missing, and all of a sudden now, then he won't know to look out for it anymore. That is why Rechista says that you actually have to inform him. Just in counting and finding that it's there is not good enough because he never knew that it was missing, and therefore he won't know to keep an eye. The point is, it knows some other way of going. It knows that there's a life outside of the herd. So therefore, from now on, you need to watch it more carefully. We can be assuming, first of all, that we're talking about there was no Yirsh, but even if there was Yirsh, you need Yirsh and you need Shinu Rishus or Shinu Maisa or whatever for the Gazlan to be Koine and just have to return the money. Here we're talking about there's no Shinu Maisa and no Shinu Rishus, no nothing, yeah. Okay. Question is, Mi Omar Rava Hafi. Fine, but did Rava really say such a thing? We're assuming that Rava is not just explaining Rav Chisda, we assume that if he's explaining him, he actually holds like him. So does that mean, are you telling me that Rava holds like Rav Chisda?
Are we questioning Rava?
Yes, because we're going to show that Rava said something else, which seems to contradict that. Well, Omar Rava, because Rava said, Hayman dechazil chabre da'ag ve'imra me'edra didei. If somebody sees another person picking up a sheep from his herd, Imra is a sheep, yeah. So he sees somebody else. In the sheep, that's the Aramaic word for it. So he sees somebody else picking up a sheep from his herd, intending to steal it, and he yelled at him, Vishadye, and the guy dropped the sheep. So he doesn't know the owner whether the guy actually returned the sheep or not. He sees the guy walking off with the sheep. He sees the guy gets scared and drops it. Does that mean he dropped it as in he put it back in the herd or not? He just dropped it and it's still somewhere away. And at that point the sheep dies or gets stolen. So he's chayav for anything that happens to it. Now here we're talking about the guy. He saw the guy picking it up, so he knows that it's being stolen. There's that, and yet it seems that the guy returned it without him knowing. And we're saying chayav achrusa. That's different than what Rav Chisda is saying. That's similar to what Rav is saying. That ladas tzarich das. The answer is we're asking, how can we say that Rava holds like Rav Chisda when it seems that he explained this in like the way that like Rav said? And to continue the question, my lab afagav demani. Now, l'chura, aren't we talking about that even if the owner counted the sheep and found it back over there, nevertheless, we're saying chayav achrusa because he didn't inform him, like Rav Chisda said. The answer is, no, you don't have to say that. Deloy mani, no, we're talking about he didn't yet count him, so he doesn't yet know for sure whether that sheep is back in the herd.
We never said he counted it.
This is Rava saying, right, so Rava is saying, so in other words, we could very well say, that he didn't count it. So he's aware that the guy dropped it, he doesn't know whether he put it back in the herd or not, he didn't yet count them, and now the sheep got lost or stolen. Once he counts it, then again, since he had das, then that's what Rav Chisda is saying. He doesn't need to be specifically informed the sheep was taken, because he knows the sheep was taken. All he needs is to count his sheep and find that it's back there.
Rav Chisda agrees with that?
Yeah, that's what Rav Chisda said. Shaloi ladas, you don't need. Yeah, that's that ladas, you don't count. Need that. Yeah. That's what Rav Chisda said. Ladas, minyan poiter, that he said. Could be lines from the bottom of Amar Aleph. Okay. So yes, what Rava is saying fits very well with Rav Chisda's opinion. Okay. Now the question is, Umi Omer Rav Hachi. Fine. How are we saying that Rav held? But we said on Omer Aleph that Rav held the other way around, the opposite of Rav Chisda, that if it was stolen Ladat, you need to inform him. If it was stolen Shaloi Ladat, then it's good enough once he counts it. Va'omer Rav, but we find that Rav said a different din. Hechzir la'eder shevamid b'yotza. That if you return the sheep to a flock of sheep, if you return the sheep to the flock, to the herd that is in the desert, you're yotze.
That means
and then, well, the point is, there's no ladas, the owner wasn't informed, there's no minion, he's not counting them, and we're saying, at that point, you're potter.
But that's only minion.
Why would it be any different in the midbar?
If he's just counting the
midbar. Yeah, but he didn't count him yet. The fact is, he didn't count him yet, he wasn't informed.
They're not going anywhere in the midbar.
First of all, yes, they could. So one of them could die at that point, one of them could be stolen, whatever. The point is, according to Rav, ladas, tzarech das. So, yeah. Yes, but there is a specific case. Rav does agree in a case. Rikuasa means a sheep that's speckled. Rikuasa means like the speckled sheep from Yaakov and Lavan over there, the ones with patches and speckles and dots and whatever. If this sheep is noticeable, if it's distinctive among the other sheep, as opposed to all the others, then you don't even need to count. Rav would say, you don't even need to count, because as soon as that sheep is back there, you'll immediately notice it. And therefore, Rav would agree, that's the case. When we say, it's talking about a case where no counting is needed. As soon as that sheep is back there, you'll know about it.
Because it's like counting.
Because it's counting one, yeah. Lema Katano, the Gemara says, fine. Should we say that this whole issue, these different ways of understanding the Mishnah, or basically primarily this question of Ladas versus Shalai Ladas, is this the same as a machlokas tanoi? Braita says, "Hagrin of tzulemina eder." If somebody steals a sheep from the flock, the sella minakis, so he steals a sella, a coin from a purse. L'makom shagon of yachzu, Rabbi Bishmal. So Rabbi Bishmal says, just wherever he took it from is where he has to return it to, which it sounds like it means that he doesn't have to inform the guy. Rabbi Bishmal, Rabbi Akiva omit tzorach das b'ilam, and Rabbi Akiva says he has to inform him.
Yeah, and inform him.
Now, Savarua, for purposes of the question, we assume that the Kula Alma Islahu de Rabbi Yitzchak, that both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva would agree with what Rabbi Yitzchak says. The Amr Rabbi Yitzchak, Adam Asir, the Mashmash Bekise Bekol Shah. Rabbi Yitzchak says that a person commonly checks his wallet or his money bag very often. We'll learn in Bava Metzia, for example, that therefore if a person loses money, we'll learn in Eila Metzias in a few weeks' time. You assume that he realizes it right away. Well, but they're talking about the Selam and a Kiss.
Yeah, we're selling Fine. Kiss, but not the
point is, they're mentioning both cases.
Right.
So, my lot, the Sela Ladas, the Lahura, aren't then, or shouldn't we assume then that we are talking about the case where the owner knew that the Sela was stolen? Because he checks his money bag all the time, so he'll realize that the Sela is missing. And therefore, if we're saying that there's a question, does he have to inform the owner or not, or we're close to the Rav Shmuel. Therefore, this machlokas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva is exactly like machlokas of Rav and Shmuel. Just as Rav says in our Mishnah that Ladas Tzarech Das, that if it was with Das, then you have to inform him, and Shmuel says you don't, Minyan Poter, the same thing over here. On the face of it, Rabbi Shmuel would be saying like Shmuel, that Minyan Poter, as soon as he counts it and finds that it's there, you're Poter, and Rabbi Akiva would be like Rav. The answer is loy. No, not necessarily. Do you have to understand it that way? You could say b'tlesh aloy l'das. You don't have to assume that it was taken with the owner's das. You could assume that when it comes to the sheep, they're arguing over a case of shaloy l'das. It was done without his knowledge. Over plug to the v'chister v'rabbi Yechon, and in that case, the machlokas is between the second two opinions that we said before, between Rav Chista and Rav Yechanan. We can say the machlokas of Rav Chista and Rav Yechanan reflect this machlokas of Hanayim. Well, fine, it's a machlokas of Amoraim, and we don't like to say that a machlokas of Amoraim is like machlokas of Hanayim, but here it's basically how do we explain our Mishnah. So it's not so bad if it's like the same machlokas, if it's like a machlokas of Hanayim. And the point is that if we say that the tzleh is shaloi midah, we could assume the money could also be shaloi midah. I mean, Adam also the mashmash b'kisa. Fine, a person checks his money bag when it's on him. What we could explain, in other words, that they're both talking about cases of shalom l'das. The tzleh is obviously shalom l'das. He wasn't with the herd the whole time, and the money is shalom l'das. You know, he left his money bag at home, for example, and somebody reached into the window and pulled out a sella from it.
Although he checks himself.
Right? He checks it when it's on him. He doesn't check it when it doesn't. Yeah.
So why would the Amoraim disagree?
It's nine.
Because, and again, we could say that it is recapitulating the same machlokas of the Tanoim. Fine, but it's a question of how do we understand our Mishnah. It boils down to, do we understand our Mishnah, like Rabbi Akiva or like Rabbi Shmuel? That's fine. The problem of explaining machlokas Amoraim to be the same as machlokas Tanoim is when it's an independent machlokas. Why are they doing over the same machlokas that the Tanoim already dealt with?
Right.
But when it's just how to explain a Mishnah, it's not such a big deal. Okay. However, Omer of Zvid Mishmei de Rabba. No, B'shemesh Shogonav Mishus Abaylim, because you could discuss this yet another possibility. If it's a Shomer who stole it from the Rishus of the owner, Kula Almalei Pligi Kidur Rav Chista, then everybody would agree with Rav Chista. Because in other words, what do you have? Let's say we're not talking about a regular Ganav or Gazlan. Let's say we're talking about a Shomer. He's guarding the sheep. He's the shepherd or whatever, and he himself becomes the Gazlan. If he takes it,
Shomer,
doesn't matter the Shomer, yeah. I mean, on the side over here, it brings up the Rashba's gear, says the going of Mishra's file. Same difference. The point is, if he actually takes it out of the Rashus of the owner, fine. Rav Chista's point at the top of the Amud, that once the sheep has discovered a new way, that it's not walking in the same way and going in the same way as the rest of the herd, then from now on, it's going to have a bit of more an independent streak, and therefore the owner will have to look out for it. Everybody would agree with that concept. It's a balabatish. Everybody would agree with it. Yeah. So then, kula amalei pligi kidur Rav Chista. Then everybody would agree that, like Rav Chista said, you have to inform the owner. V'hocha b'shemesh shegonav mirshusai sheyaksel l'makom shegonav kamitzvah. Rather, we can say the machlokas between Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva may not be the same as what we were dealing with in our Mishnah. The machlokas between them may be in a specific case where the shomer is stealing it from his own rishus, meaning the owner had given him the seller or the sheep as a pikadon. And now he decides at some point, instead of holding on to it for the owner, I'm going to keep it for myself. Well, there's no nigri baraisa that he's not teaching it any different way of going than it was until now. Or in the case of the seller, obviously there isn't anyway. But the point is, in the case of the sheep, there's no other way that it went. It didn't develop any independence. And in the case of the seller, the owner didn't know that it was missing in the first place because he gave it to him to watch to begin with. He doesn't know that all of a sudden the guy decided to change what he's doing. Yeah. Therefore, that's the machlokas. She yachta the makom shegonav kamitzvah. Now the machlokas comes in. Can he return? Can he just return it to where he took it from? And the reason for the machlokas, nothing to do with this question of ladas or shalom ladas, but rather, Rabbi Akiva savor kol salo shmira. So Rabbi Akiva says once he decided to steal it, then his shmira is over. At that point, the owner is not going to trust him anymore. Therefore, you need das. Not because maybe in an ordinary case of a ganav you do or you don't need das, as the case may be. But here, where he himself reneged on his deal to be a shomer, then he would have to inform the owner because the owner is not going to trust him anymore to be a shomer. Therefore, he has to inform the owner. But Rabbi Shmuel saw a light call, so
to continue any other
shomer. Well, to continue as a shomer, yeah. But Rabbi Shmuel saw a light call, so to shmir. Say, whereas Rabbi Shmuel would hold the shmira is not over yet. The fact is, he still is a shomer. So fine, he's still a shomer, then he doesn't have to inform the owner.
It's good, shomer, by stealing.
But now he's returning it. Now he's going back to being a shomer.
Yeah.
For a moment, he had a lapse over there for the moment, and now he's going back to his original job. And therefore, just returning it to where he took it from and to begin with would be good enough.
Sometimes that to be convinced himself that it's a big deal. I'll watch many. I'll use it for half a day. I'll bring it back.
Could be. Okay.
The halacha is in this case.
The halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, as it usually is.
Right.
Okay, fine. Lema minyan poter tanoi. Fine. However, can we still say that at the very least, the question of whether when the owner counts the sheep and finds that they're all there, can we say that that is a machlokas tanoim? The Tanya.
In the case of
either of sheep or money. The Tanya had gozel chaver biv liav loy b'cheshbon. Suppose somebody steals from somebody else, and then later on he includes it in a larger amount. Meaning, Rashi says, so let's say he stole from him $10. Later on, he's going and buying something from him. He pays him. He overpays him by $10 in order to include, without telling him exactly. Because he's too embarrassed. Rashi says he's too embarrassed to say that I stole from you. So therefore, he figures he'll deal with it that way. Is he yotzer or not? Tani chode yotzer, tani idach lo yotzer. One braita says he's yotzer, the other one says he doesn't. Now, Svarua, again, the Yeshivalite assumed, for purposes of the question, the Kulam is for Rabbi Yitzchok, but again, we would say that both brightest hold of what Rabbi Yitzchok says, Dama Adam also the Mashmash the Kisib Khoshavasha, that he says that a person commonly checks his wallet, his money bag, very, very commonly, all the time. Therefore, in other words, very soon he'll find that the money is back. My lab v'hakamifligi. So then, in that case, shouldn't we say that's the machlokes? The marsav a yotzer, the demander am a yotzer, the brayser that says that he's yotzer, sort of a minion poiter, holds that just counting is enough. So you don't have to inform him, even though at some point he knew that money was missing. But now that he got it back and finds ten extra dollars in there, then you're good. Umander am a lo yotzer, sort of a minion any poiter, and the one who says you're not yotzer holds that minion is not poiter. You actually have to inform him. In that case, then that would be exactly part of the machlokes that we had before. Yeah. Amri, so the answer, no. Amri, the Yeshivalite, the ones who asked the question, or some other group of Yeshivalite answer. It's some of the Gemara. It's not necessarily tied with the name of any particular Amora. The Yeshivalites in the Bais Medrash discussed this. And for some reason, I don't know why, we seem to have had this expression Amri a lot more commonly in this Masechta than any other. I don't know why. But, okay, anyway. Amri, so they say, actually, no. If we hold, like Rabbi Yitzchak, that a person checks his money very commonly, then everybody would agree that once he counts it, you're potter. Because, yeah, he's very soon going to count it. Within the next few minutes, he's going to count it. He's going to find the extra money in there, and good. At that point, he'll know that he was reimbursed. No, rather we can say the machlokes between these two brises is, do we hold a Rabbi Yitzchak's point or not? One braisa holds of what Rabbi Yitzchak says. Therefore, once you put it back in there, you're yotze, because soon afterwards he will count it and find it. And the other one doesn't hold of what Rabbi Yitzchak says. He may not check it for another week or two, and therefore you're still chai bachur yotze until he actually checks it. The Ibai same, the Kolam is for Rabbi Yitzchak, or you could answer that both brises do agree with Rabbi Yitzchak, v'loikasha, but it's still not a contradiction. Had money v'roma lebekise, because one case could be talking about where he counted it, the guy counted the money, the extra that you paid him, again, you paid him for something that you bought, and you paid him extra along with it. He took the money and put it in his money bag. The person who was stolen from and now got that extra money as part of the transaction, he took the money and put it into his money bag. Whereas the other case we'd be talking about where... It is the Gazlan put it. One is where the Gazlan is paying him and puts it directly into the guy's money bag. Here, I'm paying you for what I bought, and he doesn't tell him that there's the extra money in there, and he throws it directly into the bag. So now it's all there in the bag. Once the guy counts it, he's gonna find it. Whereas the other case is where he counts it into the guy's hand.
Then he knows.
If he counts it into his hand, he may have he may not be paying attention how much was actually put into his hand. The whole point is you're overpaying him without him realizing. Later on, he goes throws it into his money box without realizing how much is in there, and therefore he never realizes that it was reimbursed, and therefore you're not yet. Or yet another possibility. Both cases could be talking about where the Gazlan put the money directly into the purse. But when do we say that he's not yotze? Rashi learns is if he had other money in the bag, but he didn't know how much. So now he didn't know. The nigzel didn't know before how much money there was in there exactly. So now you put an extra money in there. What did you accomplish? He's not going to know for sure that he was paid back for the gzela.
Does he know he was stolen from?
What?
Does he know he was stolen from?
That's the point. That's the deal. That's what we're talking about. But he's not necessarily going to know. He doesn't know how much was in there. So therefore, he's not going to know now. Whereas if he had no other money in there now, and he finds his extra money in there, he's going to know. The Rambam learns exactly the other way around. The Rambam learns this last answer. That what we mean is, if he didn't have any money in the bag, and the Gazlan put the money in his bag, you can't assume that Rabbi Yitzchak's kazaka, that he's going to constantly check his bag, is going to apply. Because if he assumed the bag is empty, why would he bother checking it? He may not find out for weeks. Whereas if he had money in there, then you go back to what Rabbi Yitzchak said. Adam also the mashmish the kisei. So soon enough, he'll find that hey, there's extra money in there, and then put two and two together.
Check to know that it's there.
Well,
that's
the point. If he didn't have money in there to begin with, you have to inform him so that he should know this money bag, which I assume to be empty, actually has money in it that you're paying.
Find out by himself. If he knew that there's no money to begin with.
No, if he knew there's no money in there, why would he bother checking it? Think of it. It's like, you know,
steal his money.
No, a money bag that he's not that he assumed was empty. We're not talking about on him. We're talking about that.
And then suddenly it becomes heavy and one.
If it's a money bag that's lying somewhere in his house, for example, or behind his counter or whatever, and it's empty, what, he's not going to think.
No, we're talking about a money bag that's on him.
No, who said?
Okay, he's checking on a regular.
Yeah, that's the point. In other words, but if that's the point. But if it's empty, he's not going to think that he's not going to think to check. Mishnah says. You're not allowed to buy from shepherds wool or milk or baby goats because they may have stolen them from the owner. The shepherd is taking care of them for the owner. Actually, you make an interesting point because Ma'aril Diskin says that the Gemara is going to talk about that you can't. The Gemara is going to talk about buying cheese from them. He says an interesting vote. Why not cheese? He says we must be talking about in Chutz La'aretz because we learned before in Merubah you're not allowed to raise small animals like sheep and goats in Eretz Yisrael anyway. Necessarily, we're talking about in Chutz La'aretz where there's always the problem of Chalav Akum. And if this guy is selling milk or cheese, you never know. It might have been mixed with Chalav Akum. So you can't, the Pashta, so the reason.
I thought it was Midrabanan.
It is, but it's still also. No, the suffix of Chol HaVakum that a goy might have mixed in tray for milk, that concept exists in Midrabanan, but the tray for milk is also Midaraita. Milk from tray for animals is also Midaraita.
Tray for milk, but
Chol HaVakum. You take this Chol HaVakum, Chol HaStam, let's not get into that right now. I mean, there's a Moshe's famous heter on the basis that the American government, or most Western governments, supervise milk, and therefore their supervision can be considered the equivalent of a yid watching the milking. That's a whole other matter. But the
it's
real Chol HaVakum, where there's a possibility that a goy may have mixed in milk from a tray for animals. That's derabanan. It's a suffix that conceivably could be deraisa. I mean, derabanan answered it on the basis of that potential problem.
Why is everybody not keeping
it? Because they hold a Moshe's hetero of Hall of Stam, because, again, government supervision. Now is not the time to talk about it. Anyway, you're not allowed to buy from them these things because they may have stolen them. Similarly, you can't buy from people who are guarding fruit while it's ripening to make sure people don't take them. You're not allowed to buy from them asimuperis, wood or fruit, because, again, they may have taken from the orchard that they're watching. But you're allowed to buy from women woolen clothes in Yehuda because that's something that they themselves make. They themselves make them and sell them with their husband with their husbands knowing about it. Or linen clothes in the Galil because that was the common kind of thing that they wore over there. Fine, they have a cheskes kashrus. You still have to be careful buying something that might have been stolen. Very nice, they have a cheskes kashrus. You can give them an aliyah, but you can't. Buying from them, you have to. So you're allowed to buy from them clay pishtim begol, but golim b'shorin. Also, you're allowed to buy from women calves in shorin. Rashi has two explanations of shorin. One is it just means like the open valleys or whatever. Because it's in public, they obviously didn't steal them. They would be doing that in secret. Rashi's second explanation is that Shoren is the name of a place, the name of a region in Eretz Yisrael. I think it's on the coast of Eretz Yisrael nowadays, like the area of Tel Aviv and north of it, more or less, is the Sharon. That's what they call it nowadays, anyway. It was a good place for raising. It was a good place for raising calves. So therefore, you can buy them from them because there's no reason to assume they stole them. It's pashtus they themselves are raising them over there and selling them. V'chulin sh'omru l'hat. I mean, in all these cases, if the seller told you to hide it, also, then it's also because even, for example, let's say it's a golem masharon or whatever, all these other cases, the fact that they're telling you to hide it means there's some funny business going on here. The loichen beitzim, but a golem mekom makom, you're allowed to buy eggs or chickens from anywhere because those are things nobody's going to bother stealing those. We don't assume that people are going to say it's more likely they're selling them from there. It's more likely they're selling them from their own farm. Yeah, maybe that's the reason. Okay. You're not allowed to buy from shepherds adult goats or baby goats, or shearings of wool. Tlushin Shalpsema, or loose pieces of wool, like sometimes a little bit of loose wool comes off loose from the animal. You're not allowed to all those, because again, those are things that they may have stolen from the owner. Avaloichin men tefurin, but you're allowed to buy from them clothes that are sewn together. Because at that point it's theirs already. Even if they did steal the wool, they were kind of bashinui. By now it's been made into a garment, they were kind of bashinui. They're just going to have to reimburse the owner the money, but the clothing itself is already in. You're allowed to buy from them milk or cheese out in the desert. Why in the desert? But midbar, by the way, doesn't necessarily mean the desert, like the Sahara Desert. It means like the grazing areas in the middle of nowhere, kind of. You're allowed to do that over there because Rashi says the owners don't usually go there and take it. The milk, remember, it's not like nowadays you have refrigerated trucks. The milk spoils quickly, so the owner is not going to bother schlepping out all the way to the midbar to get the milk. Therefore, he'll tell the shepherd that he can keep it for himself. So therefore, you're allowed to buy it from him because he's selling something that legitimately belongs to him. V'loy b'yishuv, but not in the city because it should be brought to the owner. V'loy k'men dalad v'heitzah, and you're allowed to buy from a shepherd 4 or 5 sheep. Dalad v'hei gizin, you're allowed to buy from them 4 or 5 shearings of wool. Avaloy shteitzah v'loy shtei gizin, but not 2 sheep or 2 shearings of wool, because 4 or 5, you'll notice if they're missing. The guy is not going to be able to get away with, a wolf came and ate a bunch of them up. It's not likely. But 2 of them, he could easily get away with an excuse like that where really he stole them. What about 3? The Gemara is going to talk about it. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a biceous loichim man. Rabbi Yehuda says that animals that regularly come home, like they graze out in the fields all day and then they come home in the evening. All these animals we're talking about domesticated, but in other words, house, they basically stay around the house and then they go out to the fields to graze. Loichim man, you're allowed to buy from them. Midbarius, but the ones that all the time stay out in the midbar, ain't loichim man, you're not allowed to buy from them. Because the biceus, the owner will notice if they're missing. The roya is not going to get away so easily with claiming that they were stolen. Therefore, if he's selling them, it means it's legitimate. But they're the midbarius, yeah. Kolashol, over the general rule, kolashol roya moicher balabais magishvay, anything which the shepherd, if he were to sell it illegally and the owner would notice that it's missing, which therefore he wouldn't dare, loichem mehen, then you're allowed to buy from them. Ain magishvay, if it's something the owner wouldn't notice, ain loichem mehen, then you're not allowed to because he may steal it and the owner won't realize. Okay, now let's analyze the b'raisa. We said you can buy from them 4 or 5 sheep or 4 or 5 shearings. Why 4 or 5? If you're allowed to buy 4, how much more so you're allowed to buy 5? Well, they just say you're allowed to buy 4, and we'll understand any number larger than that. Means it means if the herd consists of only 5 animals and the guy is selling 4 of them, you're allowed to do that because there's no way he's going to get away with being able to say afterwards most of it was eaten up by wolves or whatever. And the owner will notice that only one out of 5 sheep came home. It means that he's doing it legitimately. The chomish me'eder gadol. If it's a large herd, then you're allowed to buy even 5.
Not more.
Yes. Because again, 5 already is a noticeable. No, it means you could buy. No, it means because in other words, a large number. You can't buy only 4 because 4 he might claim that you didn't notice, you miscounted or whatever. But 5 will already be a noticeable difference, and therefore he wouldn't dare do it if it wasn't legitimate. Yeah. The Ikadamri, or another version, Amr of Chista, it means Abba Me'eder Chamisha, 4 out of 5. It means 4 out of a small herd or 5 out of a big. Okay. Now, in the Braise itself, you have a contradiction. Amr dalav behe tzoyin, dalav behe gizin, implying dalav behe enavol shalosh loy, implying you're allowed to buy 4 or 5, as the case may be, but never 3. In the safe, avol shtei tzoyin, but then the Braise had continued, you're not allowed to buy 2 sheep, shalosh zabninim, but implying that 3 are good. The answer is, loikasha, haba briyasa, haba chishasa. One is talking about healthy, fat sheep, where the owner notices, the owner keeps a close eye on them, so if even 3 are missing, he'll notice. The other one is, so therefore you're allowed to buy 3, because again, he wouldn't dare. The other one is talking about weak sheep, the thin sheep, they're not so important to him, so he won't notice so much if 3 are missing. Mashenki, if you take 4 already, that'll be something he'll notice. Then Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a biteous loichin man, and Boris in loichin man. Hold on, we said Rabbi Yehuda had said you're allowed to buy from them animals that come home in the evening, but not ones that stay all the time out in the desert. Which part of the whole braisa is Rabbi Yehuda referring to? Is he referring to the reisha and then he's being machmir? Or maybe he's going on the sefer and then he's being maple. Namely, translate, maybe he's going on the reisha and going lachomra as follows. Where the Tanakhama had said you're allowed to buy four or five sheep, and Rabbi Huda comes and says, not in all cases. There's cases you can't even buy that. It's only if there are animals that come home in the evening, because the owner will notice. But if there are animals that always stay out in the desert, then you're not even allowed to buy four or five, because he'll try to evade the owner. So therefore, he'd be machmir. Or maybe he's going on the sefer, or the kula, and therefore he's going the kula. Where the Tanakhama has said he now wants to buy two sheep or two shearings. Where Rabbi Yehuda comes in and says, that only applies to animals that always stay out in the desert. So two he might get away with. But if they always come home, you're even allowed to buy two because the owner will notice the two are missing. So what is it? Tashma. We learn in a braisa more clearly that Rabbi Yehuda says, "Loichin baitius man, you're allowed to buy animals that come home in the evening from the shepherd. The ein loichin man midbarius, you're not allowed to buy ones that always stay out in the desert. In all places, though, you're allowed to buy whether at home or in the desert, you're allowed to buy from them four or five.
Meaning,
again, as we said before, four if it's a small herd, five if it's a large herd. You know, it could mean more. You're allowed to buy more. The larger the number you're buying, the less chance that the guy is going to try to cheat his employer. Yeah. So if you want to buy seven or ten, because the guy is not going to try to steal seven or ten animals and try to get away with it. We assume that he's selling what belongs to him. So since Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you can buy them anywhere, four or five, that means his distinction between Baisius and Midbarius refers to the safer, where the Tanakhama had said two you can't, and Rabbi Yehuda is coming and saying that if they're Baisius, you could even buy two. Ulakula, so therefore he's going Lakula. Shmamina, okay, so that proves it. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda holds then, that if it's Baisius, you're allowed to buy even two, and if it's Midbarius, you're allowed to buy four or five, or more. Eventually, he'll come out and check on his flock. I mean, he's not going to leave them in the hands of the Roya forever, you know. So sooner or later, if there's that many missing, he'll know.
If it's a larger amount,
If it's a larger amount, he'll know, and therefore the shepherd is not going to dare pull any shit like that.
How did Abraham Avinu do? He had thousands of heads of cattle. How did he know?
He had a lot of workers. He had each worker was in charge of a dozen or two of them. I don't know. You don't have one shepherd in charge of hundreds of sheep. You know. Okay. So then.
Why would you assume?